In the final phase of Private First Class Bradley Manning's military trial at Fort Meade in Maryland, government prosecutors are urging the judge in the case, Colonel Denise Lind, to sentence the young whistleblower to 60 years in prison. Manning was convicted on 20 of 22 charges of violating the Espionage Act and theft of government property for his leak in 2010 of more than 700,000 classified military and State Department documents related to U.S. wars and foreign policy. Private Manning issued an apology during the sentencing portion of the proceeding when he told the court, quote, "I am sorry that my actions hurt people. I am sorry that it hurt the United States." In asking Judge Lind to sentence Manning to spend the majority of his remaining life in jail, prosecutor Captain Joe Morrow argued that a long prison sentence would dissuade other soldiers from following in Manning's footsteps. Bradley Manning gained access to the documents he later released to the anti-secrecy WikiLeaks website while working as an intelligence analyst in Iraq. Among the most disturbing material released was a video recording of U.S. helicopter pilots attacking people on the ground in Baghdad that resulted in the deaths of at least 9 people, including a Reuters news photographer and his driver. Your reporter spoke with Daniel Ellsberg, a former government military analyst who in 1971 leaked the now-famous Vietnam War-era Pentagon Papers to the press. The documents he released chronicled the lies and deceit employed by the government to justify U.S. military intervention in Southeast Asian wars. Here, Ellsberg reflects on the recent verdict in the Bradley Manning trial, as well as issues involving massive government surveillance and the current campaign to silence whistleblowers and chill investigative journalism.
In contrast to the predictions or the simple assertions made at the very beginning, including, I think, by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, that WikiLeaks and the person who gave them the information, who was not yet determined to be Bradley Manning, had blood on their hands or would have blood on their hands. And that has turned out to be not the case. Certainly, if there was any indication, even reasonable evidence hinting at it, we would have heard that in the trial. And in fact, if there was anything like compelling evidence that one single person had been harmed, I think we would have seen the picture of that person's body on the cover of Time magazine. As it was, the testimony was that they had no evidence that any single person had been harmed physically. So the statement about blood on the hands is really deserves a second look, because, of course, the people who are making that claim are people who, I have to say, and this is not rhetorical, have blood up to their neck, not just on their hands, from the participation in an aggression against Iraq and in the escalations and the various murders in Afghanistan and elsewhere. And I'm talking about the reckless and wanton killing of civilians in general. So not one person has even been investigated, let alone prosecuted or convicted, for lying us into the war in Iraq, very simply, or for the war crimes that were documented by Bradley Manning's revelations of widespread turning over of prisoners to Iraq with the knowledge that they would be tortured. That's a crime. And the order hundreds of times not to investigate that further after the initial report had been made by a conscientious trooper somewhere in the scale, and they said, do not investigate further. That's an illegal order under international law and under our domestic law. And Bradley Manning was the one person who, in the end, disobeyed, as he should have, that order and exposed those tortures.
As Bradley Manning reflects on what he has accomplished or not accomplished with the revelations in these documents released, what do you think he can calculate was the benefit here, if any?
I would say he would have to conclude that there was no benefit in terms of turning people over to the Iraqis for torture. As far as one can see, there was no investigation followed from that. That's very much to our discredit as a nation, that did not affect change. He also revealed that we had killed, by government statistics, secret statistics, that we had killed at least 15 to 20,000 more civilians than had been discovered even by the Iraq body count, which itself was much higher than the government count. So these 20,000, again, didn't have any big effect in this country. And if he were to judge just by the immediate effects in this country, I think he'd have to conclude that there was not much effect. There's an interesting contrast there between the immediate response to Snowden's revelations, but abroad, an enormous effect. His revelations of the American knowledge, official knowledge of corruption in Tunisia, the Tunisian dictator that we supported, the U.S. government supported, was a critical element in the demonstrations, the occupations there in Tunis that led to the overthrow within weeks, actually, of that dictator and an immense immediate effect, much more, for instance, than the Pentagon Papers could be said to have had 40 years ago, certainly immediately. That led in turn to the occupations of Tahrir Square in Egypt, which gave the Egyptians a chance for democracy, which is now in retreat very much years later, but certainly very promising, looked promising at the time. That in turn inspired Occupy here, the Occupy movement. I'd say the biggest of all is that his revelation of American atrocities that had been covered up here in Iraq and not investigated and not prosecuted made it impossible for President Obama to do what he wanted to do, which was to keep 10 or 20,000 more, 20,000 Americans in harm's way in Iraq after the deadline that had been set under Bush. By this time, a number of those people would be dead by now had they stayed there. We don't know how many. And I think those people, their lives, in other words, they were distinctly saved by that revelation by Bradley Manning. And, as I say, on the other hand, no evidence that a single life was lost as a result.
Daniel, just a final question for you, and it relates to journalism and the state of journalism in this country. When you released the Pentagon Papers, publications such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other newspapers did publish those articles, despite strong condemnation and anger at the Nixon White House during the time. It seems that we're living in a very different climate right now, where the Obama administration has declared war on whistleblowers with unprecedented cases under the Espionage Act against many personalities, including Edward Snowden. What are your concerns right now about the chilling effect of what's happening here in terms of any journalistic challenges or exposure to the national surveillance or national security state?
Well, I think the challenge is severe, and the real question is it reversible and retrievable? And I think that that, in fact, is possible, thanks to Snowden and what's been raised here now. It's just possible that we'll turn this tide back. So I think that this battle that's going on now is for the lifeblood of democracy, which is, in fact, unauthorized truth-telling or whistleblowing.
That was Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked the Vietnam War-era Pentagon Papers to the press in 1971. For more commentary and analysis on the Bradley Manning trial and challenges to the national surveillance state, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.